The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Claypo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish, along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. I am Dr. Josh Claypo, and I think, Alex, that I'm losing my voice slightly. It's either that or I'm trying to sound more like Tony Curry. I don't know which one you think.
It sounds a little like it, man. You may want to go have that checked out.
Well, you know, they always tell me I'm really bad about this because, you know, I'm not a radio guy. And I know both James Keats and Tony have told me that you need to whisper, you know, you need to talk quietly like this. And I'm not that guy. I'm the guy who gets excited and I just start straining my vocal cords. And that's why I get this. No, I'm super excited about today's segment talking about competition for a lot of reasons. One, it is competition is that thing that both drives us to success and can also drive us out of our mind. For some people, it raises their game. For some people, it takes them out of their game. And finding that way to compete in a healthy manner is just so critical in business and sports and life. But more importantly than that, the Guns N' Roses song was so perfect. When I was looking to, I was like, oh, this is beautiful. Welcome to the jungle. It gets worse here every day. I thought I was like, man, Alex is going to love this one. So I'm very excited to hear about talking competition with you, but I was actually really proud of my song choice, which
you did great there. I mean, we're starting off with a classic.
This is one of those ones where, man, the parallels to life are huge, and you do see people who, they run from competition, or they create a world for themselves where there's little to no competition. I'm talking like maybe a little more on a personal level. And then you see people who are willing to kind of get in there and go head to head with somebody or something that, that rises to the same level. It's interesting to me in business because, you know, you're talking about people's, financial livelihood. And you want to figure out how to win, but, you know, how do you go up against something that actually could take something away from you? You know, and again, the parallels with sports and with relationships are huge. But what are your thoughts about sort of competition in business? And don't tell me as an economist, it's good for the marketplace. We all know that. We all know that. But that it's good for the marketplace until it's your business. Until it's your business. So enlighten us about why competition is good for me in my business.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you look at competition, I mean, you're right. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? On one hand, your competitors can drive you out of business if you're not careful. But on the other hand, you know, it's really competition is what drives us to improve and to innovate and to do new things and bring new ideas and new products to market and really figure out, you know, how we're going to compete. And what I found over my career is that a lot of people look at the competition as a negative thing. They, if we just had no competitors. And, you know, well, you end up in one of two situations there. Either you end up in a monopoly or close to a monopoly. And you can see what happens in industries that have a monopoly or they have a very small number of competitors in a marketplace. The whole market starts to stagnate. The whole market just slows down. There's no need to go out and try new things and take risks and come up with new ideas because, you know, where are your customers going to go? They're kind of stuck with you. And so I prefer to view it on the side of competition as a good thing. It drives us to innovation. It drives us towards improving what we're doing. And ultimately, I think it makes companies a more interesting place to work. And I guess the worst example of no competition is the government. So when you go to get your driver's license renewed or whatever, you have to stand in line at the DMV and you think this sucks. Well, there's a reason it sucks because that's the only place you can get a driver's license. Now, if the government had competition there, I guarantee you, you'd be able to get a driver's license in 5 minutes. But standing in line at the DMV is your only option. because there's one provider of this sort of thing. So I think competition is really important, but it's interesting. You know, I've gone into companies that really knew who their competitors were. And they were very, very focused on what's the competition doing every day. And then I've walked into companies where, honestly, I walked into one company one time and I said, well, you know, who are your main competitors? And they were like, well, we really don't have any real competitors. I was like, yeah, right. Because one of two things is the case.
Sorry. Hysterical, I've, right? I've heard that. No, I've heard that a million times. Again, you know, I'm a psychologist and I'm like, bullshit.
Right. Exactly.
But it is because it, but they meet. Well, I don't know about your in your example, but like, I sometimes think that companies that will say we have no competition, they mean it. Now they may be wrong, but they really believe their own narrative, because to believe otherwise would get back to, oh no, you know, now there is pressure. So do you see it as a lack of being insightful, or do you see it kind of as like a psychological sort of defense mechanism that we don't really have any competition?
You know, I think it's probably a bit of both. You know, so I generally find one of two, when I hear, well, we don't have any real competitors, generally there's one of two situations happening there, right? One is they're just not aware of the competitors they have in the marketplace. And they think they've got something that's very unique, and they don't realize that they do have competition, and they're losing to competitors, but they don't know it. They have no idea they're actually losing deals, because they're like, well, we never see, you know, company XYZ when we're out there in the market selling. I'm like, yes, because you're not in those deals. So yeah, it's almost like you almost put a set of blinders on there. And you say, well, yeah, there's no competition. Yeah, it turns out they're eating your lunch. You just don't know it. So that's one scenario. And then I think the other scenario is kind of what you described. People either get so enamored with their own capabilities as a company or their own products and all their unique features, they mistake competitive differentiation for having no competition. They'll say, well, we're the only ones in the industry that can do this. I'm like, yeah, maybe so, but that's one of 50 features or whatever that people care about. So I think, you know, in both cases though, I think people are deluding themselves, right? If you're truly in a market with no competitors, then you're either a monopoly or there's no market for what you sell. Right. Because trust me, if there were a big market for it, you'd have competition. So in some ways, having competitors validates the market you're going after. And you're not just competing with those competitors. In a lot of cases, you're competing with completely, you know, different things that people could spend their money on. You know, if you're out, for instance, if you're out selling, you know, luxury watches, you know, if you're Rolex, you might say, well, Breitling is my big competitor and we're competing with those guys. Actually, you're competing with people that are going, should I buy a $5,000 watch or spend that money somewhere else? Mm-hmm. And so you have to look at competition as not just who are my direct competitors, but sometimes you end up with indirect competitors. And again, people generally don't see that. A lot of companies don't see that they have indirect competition. And again, you could be, for instance, an airline. You might be one airline thinking, oh, the other airline just lowered their fares or whatever, and we're competing on that. But in some countries and in some routes and markets, you're actually competing with people driving. Right. And how do you compete with that? So there's hundreds of examples of this throughout the business world where you think you're competing with this narrowly focused group of competitors. In reality, you're competing with the broader market and you're competing with spend on completely different categories.
So one of the things that you, you know, you talk about competition, and there's this idea of, you know, we're better than whomever. But as you and I were sharing notes back and forth, I like the idea of being able to be better than your competition, maybe not across the board, but in certain areas. You know, again, some of your ideas that we were talking about, things like customer service, marketing, quality, you know, maybe options or functionality. And I think about sports again, and I think about, you know, there are those one in a million athletes who are amazing at everything. They're absolutely amazing at everything. They have all the physical abilities. They have all the emotional and psychological abilities. But most of the athletes, most of the teams have relative strengths and weaknesses. And to dominate another team or to win a competition, you don't necessarily have to be better than your competition in every aspect. So I think it's interesting because I think businesses can get, you can feel defeated, right? We can't compete with them. But one of the ideas you were sharing was, well, maybe you can't compete in this dimension, but did you look over here in this dimension? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the great companies, the really successful companies throughout history, made very deliberate choices about what was going to be their basis for their competitive advantage. And it can be lots of different things. It can be, you know, you can be the low cost provider out there, the low price point provider like Walmart or whomever. You can compete on quality. You know, if you look at what Toyota did, right, they said, we are going to build the most reliable cars in the world. They're not the best cars in the world necessarily. They're not the fastest. They're not the sexiest, but they put a stake in the ground that said, we are going to build the highest quality cars in the world. And the JD Power reports and all that good stuff, they all bear that out. And then they came out with their Lexus brand, which was even more high quality than anything else. So they very deliberately chose, this is what we're going to be famous for. This is where we're going to spend most of our time. And it can be one thing or it can be a couple of things, but it can't be everything. You're never going to be better than your competitors in every aspect of your game. And so it turns out that investing in those areas where you're going to be famous and you're going to have the most competitive differentiation, that can make all the difference in the world. And again, you know, you can use a lot of examples of this. You take a company like Zappos. I mean, these folks sell shoes. Mm-hmm. I mean, shoes have been around for thousands of years. It's not like they're coming up with some super innovative brand new shoe concept. But they said, you know, we're going to compete on the basis of customer service, and we're going to be the best in the industry at it. And we're going to have these return policies that are great. We're going to make buying our stuff super easy, returns super easy. And we're going to do everything we can to have a high touch relationship with our customers selling shoes. So you have to kind of pick, you know, you have to decide, you know, is it going to be on price or quality, on customer service? It could be, you know, your marketing. You look at brands like Coca-Cola, Nike. Again, these guys sell, I think Coke sells flavored water at the end of the day, right? Nike sells shoes.
Okay, so I'm going to give you another one. This is just one that I've always thought is amazing from a marketing standpoint. Toothpaste.
Oh, yeah.
Toothpaste. Like, how many different ways, and I don't care what kind of toothpaste it is, it doesn't matter who the brand is. You know, and you see the commercials and you see new, you know, it's new. I think it's toothpaste.
Super whitening.
Just super white. And you remember we went from tubes to like easier. You can get the toothpaste out easier, no clogging, all the stuff. But I mean, some of it is product innovation. Some of it, I mean, I don't like to chalk things just up to marketing, though. And what I mean by that is marketing is more than marketing. And maybe you can talk about this a little bit, about product marketing, about sort of product communications, because it's not just putting spin on it. It really is potentially highlighting something that's been there all along, but maybe the market hasn't seen it, or the market now is ready for it. Does that make sense? Is that something that you see?
Oh, yeah. I mean, marketing's more than just spinning things and advertising them, because marketing is part of a broader strategy, and that's really your go-to-market strategy. And marketing is a piece of your go-to-market strategy. But there are many different elements within a go-to-market strategy. What routes am I going to sell through, right? Am I going to sell direct? Am I going to sell through resellers or distributors or wholesalers? Who's my target market? Who am I really trying to get to buy this product? You develop personas of buyers. And you do it whether you're talking about toothpaste or you're talking about, you know, high-end enterprise level software. You have to identify who it is you're trying to sell to. And then sometimes you're going to craft different strategies to sell to different personas and different groups of people. And I think that, you know, the toothpaste one's funny. The other one that always kills me are the razor blades.
Yes.
Right. Our razor has 6 razors on it now. And you're like, did I even need 5? So much closer of a shave with 6 blades. Right. And so you get into this stuff where it does reach a point of being ridiculous at some point. Right. There's a group of people out there that probably get really excited about having a 6th blade on the razor or whatever, or the little moisturizing strip or what have you.
Hey, I like the moisturizing strip.
Everybody likes
it. I love the moisturizing strips. That's the best part.
But yeah, so you know, the whole go-to-market strategy is really important. And you're right, it's not just marketing. I think when people tend to think about marketing, they tend to think about advertising and search engine optimization and trade shows and things like that. But marketing can play a much, much broader function in really figuring out what the overall go-to-market strategy is, and then taking what they find out in the marketplace and feeding that back into the product development organizations as well. You know, I guarantee you that whoever's got the 6-bladed razor now went and did a whole bunch of market research and talked to a bunch of people and said, would you buy this? And would you pay more for a 6th blade versus 5? And so, you know, you can feed that back into the organization. And that can make you a more innovative company because you're listening to your customers. So I view marketing as kind of a two-way street. Most people kind of view it as just, we're going to push all this spin out into the marketplace, but it's equally important that marketing takes what they learn in the marketplace and bring it back into the organization and share that appropriately so that you can drive, you can drive new products, new services, new features, et cetera.
All right, so let me ask you a question. So we're talking about, you know, the competition, it's great and it's so great for us and it's wonderful and, you know, all the kind of stuff. But you're out there and let's say you're not a large business, you're not a huge business, and you are coming up head to head against the competition, and they are beating you, you know, maybe head to head sales. And again, I use with my clients, even my business clients, Alex, I like to use lots of sort of life analogies because it's all the same. So, you know, if you're a sports team, you can talk about, well, it's great. There's a lot of good teams. It helps us play better. But look, you're getting your ass kicked. You're getting your ass kicked. And it is a reality. Relationships, same sort of thing. Well, there's lots of competition around. Well, it makes you a better person. What do you do, though, when you're a business and you are getting hurt by the competition, and you know your business is not failing, but it is not thriving, you thought it was thriving, but the competition is beating you out. Now it's easy to say, well, that will, you know, just get better, but that's easier said than done when you're talking about limited resources, etc. Give us some insights on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of strategies you can take. And I've been through this and many times in my career. You know, the competition's crushing us. Why are they able to beat us? And sometimes it's just a matter of resources. Sometimes it's a matter of where they happen to be in their product life cycle versus where you happen to be. But I think there's some good strategies. One of them is to get really focused, particularly if you're a smaller company competing with a much larger company. Don't try to compete with them on their level playing field where they have an advantage, right? You're never going to get a level playing field there. They have an advantage. They have more resources. They have, you know, more marketing dollars to throw at things. They've got more product development dollars. So one way is to really focus and decide we're only going to go after this segment of the market, and we're going to tailor our products and services so that we can win in a subsegment of the market maybe the big guys aren't focusing on. They're trying to sell to everybody in the market, but if you can specialize and say we're only going to sell to this group of companies or this type of business or this type of consumer, you know, then you can try to narrow it down and focus your precious resources on something that has a much smaller scope. So that's one strategy that you see a lot of companies going down. We're going to be specialists rather than trying to be generalists because we're never going to win at this generalist competition. I think the second thing you have to do is really going back to this idea of competitive advantage. you've got to narrow the focus of your competitive advantage. You've got to be very deliberate in deciding, here's the basis upon which we're going to compete and succeed. And again, it could be price, it could be quality, it could be your marketing, it could be innovation, it could be the ecosystem of partners you're building. There's many different ways to do it. But what I find is a lot of companies, when you actually go talk to them and say, what's your basis for competition? What part of the market are you trying to go after and what makes you unique? They don't know. And they're like, well, we got some really good stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's good stuff. It's not great stuff. So being able to make it very deliberate about what you're going to be famous for. Right. Again, if Zappos had tried to compete with every other shoe manufacturer and shoe seller in the world on their playing field, they'd have lost. Mm-hmm. Right. They said, we're going to be a reseller of shoes and we're going to be really, really good at it. And they tried to compete on every angle. They wouldn't be famous now, but they're famous. You know, there's all these Harvard business case studies on these guys. Mm-hmm. And so they got really focused, a small company. They got really focused on saying, this is going to be what the aspect of our business and the aspect of our go-to-market that we're going to be famous for. And we're going to focus on that like a laser. So I think that's another way you can do it, is to really get very deliberate and make some really tough decisions about what are we going to be great at, because you can't be great at everything. So if you decide, I'm going to focus on customer service, well, guess what? There's some other aspect of your business that's going to suffer for that because you've only got so many resources. So, you know, maybe innovation suffers. Maybe you have to charge a higher price to do that. So there's going to be areas where you're not going to be as competitive. But as a smaller company, being able to get really laser focused and very deliberate on what your basis for competition and for competitive advantage is, that's going to give you some time to, you know, it takes the time to go build that up. But once you do, that's what people know you for. And that's the kind of customer you're going to attract.
So how do you do this? How do you, based on what you just said, how do you stay the course? Let me say it this way. You've got a business, you're pivoting in different areas in order to stay competitive, to stay ahead of the competition. Maybe you're incrementally moving things forward, but you're looking at your bottom line and, you know, maybe you're losing money or you're not turning a profit. Again, I see a lot of founders who, you know, they've got great perseverance and they're moving forward, but you're bleeding money. You know, how do you find that balance to know it's time for us to, like, maybe not pack in the whole organization, but like, we can't keep bleeding money? Because then you get caught in the trap of, we've dedicated all this time and resources and money. We can't stop now. Right. And you, what you don't want to do is, you know, burn up into nothing, but you're already half three quarters of the way in. When do you make the decision that the competition is such that we need to step it back or change or pivot, or in the worst case scenario, close the doors?
You know, I think one of the interesting aspects of that is, and it's particularly true of sort of small and medium businesses. I mean, the biggest advantage that a small business has when it's competing with much larger established players in the marketplace is the ability to be flexible and adapt quickly. Like, for instance, we compete with a company that their revenues are probably $100 billion a year, right? I mean, they're like hundreds of times our size. And so you say, well, gosh, how do you compete with a company that has that many resources, that has that big of a presence, a well-known brand throughout the world? And you know, one of the ways that we've been able to do that is by being far more nimble and far more flexible in the way we approach the market. You know, think about going out and buying a car. You know, you go out and buy a car from Toyota or Ford or GM or whomever. You basically can get the car, you've got some options for it, and that's all you're going to get. You can't go to, like, you know, Toyota or GM and say, you know what I'd really like on this car is 12 cup holders, right? They're going to look at you like you're from Mars. So I think being able to go out there and listen to your customers and work very closely with those customers and use that nimbleness to your advantage, right? Because you always have to be listening to what your customers are telling you and what your prospects are telling you. And if you lose touch with the market that you're in, if you lose touch with them, then it really doesn't matter what you do. Eventually, you're going to go out of business. So you've got to stay in touch with the marketplace. But the difference is, as a small or medium business, you can do something with that information about what your customers are asking for. You can do it far more quickly than your competition can, because big companies are designed to run in sort of a steady state model. They have all these people and processes and procedures and rules and everything else. And you need all of that bureaucracy to do things at scale, but that bureaucracy, it slows everything down. It slows new product innovation down. It's amazing how, if you've never worked for a really big company, and I worked for a lot of big companies in my career, as well as small startups, the biggest thing that strikes me is that the small companies have less resources, but they can react to the market many times faster than the competition. So you've got to have that willingness to pivot, that willingness to do things that are maybe a little bit different than what the big guys are doing. And if you can do that, work very closely with your customers, then you can start creating something that they have a lot of trouble keeping up with. And so it's all about this idea that this whole show is about adaptability. It's all about making sure that you're adaptable to what's happening in the marketplace and use that to your advantage. And if you don't use it to your advantage, you're always going to be competing on somebody else's playing field where they have a natural advantage. You're probably going to lose in those situations.
All right. So last thought about this, because I think this is really important. You know, if you're going at this in business or in life, if you're going solo, you know, you're doing it the whole, I'm going to do it on my own, right? I'm going to be self-made. Nobody's going to stop me, all these sorts of things. And yet if you're willing to do it with a team, you have the opportunity to leverage, you know, relative strengths and weaknesses. I guess where I'm going with this is that finding the right size team for being successful, because we've seen this. We see the, you know, the small companies that grow into the giant companies, or the small companies that are too small, and they can't get the job done. So this idea of having the right size company or the right types of team, the right types of team members in order to be successful. How much of that would you say is both a tactical versus, I don't know, it's like preferences, like, you know, wanting to have a smaller company or a larger company? I mean, can everybody be successful against the competition almost regardless of your size?
You know, I mean, I think it has less to do with the size of your company in terms of the number of people and the quality of the people that you hire. And it varies from industry to industry. But, you know, I have a general philosophy is I'd rather have one great person than two good people. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's this, you know, and we're seeing this right now, the world and particularly in the U.S., we're in this war for talent right now. And everybody's, you know, quitting their jobs or they're moving around. You got the great resignation going on. And I think that finding and retaining really, really high quality people is maybe more important than how many of those people you actually have. And I think growth is another big challenge, though. You see companies that can grow very rapidly, and then they end up in a situation where either they've grown too fast and now everything is in chaos. Or you see a situation, maybe even more times than not, where they overestimate demand and then they just get clobbered, right? And a really good example of this recently is Peloton. I just bought one of these Peloton treadmills, and I got to tell you, I love it. It's the coolest thing. And like makes me want to get on a treadmill because I'm competing with all these people I don't know, and they've gamified the whole thing. And it's wonderful. But what happened with Peloton, though, is that they started growing really rapidly, particularly when the pandemic started. And they were just selling these bikes and these treadmills as fast as they could possibly make them. But then they thought this trend was going to go on forever. And now that we're starting to see the pandemic trail off and people are going back to gyms and everything else, they all of a sudden said, whoa, we've got a bunch of warehouses full of these things that we produced, thinking we were going to sell them. And so I think it was last month, you know, they brought in a new CEO, they brought in a new, some new executives to say, okay, you got us here to this point, but now you're getting clobbered because you overestimated the growth. So growth can be a, you know, it can be a great thing. Obviously, everybody wants to grow. The growth imperative is out there for, I think, just about every company. You want to grow fast and you want to be able to do it rapidly, but you can't go crazy. You can't end up in a situation where you're over expanding and you're growing too quickly. You got to be able to manage that growth and temper the enthusiasm of your investors, because people say, ah, well, with Peloton, it was their CEO. He was to blame for all this. But the reality was the investors, the stock price was going through the roof. The investors were all on board. Everybody that had their stock was on board with this really. And if he'd come back and said, oh, you know what, folks, we're going to slow growth down, like 1,000 million people would have screamed and yelled and gnashed their teeth about, oh, I can't believe they're slowing down their growth. So you have to be careful with it. You know, you have to set the right expectations with the market. You've got to set the right expectations with your customers. You don't want to be growing so fast that you're not producing high quality products anymore. And you get a reputation for poor quality. So I think growth, again, it's a double-edged sword. But if you do it right and you're constantly looking at the market and you're constantly listening to your customers, you've got a much better shot at doing it and maintaining growth over time than just having a big spike in growth and then having that trail off.
All right. Well, Alex, I feel like I was just in a therapy session because I came in fearing competition, right? I'm all freaked out. And by the end of our session, you were able to help me understand that competition has a lot to do with how you look at it and your perspective. And there's lots of options and opportunities, and you don't have to do what we call all or none thinking. And there's lots of different ways to be successful. And I'm sort of saying that tongue in cheek, but I actually really believe it, because you just described competition for us in a way that I think gets people out of this, like, I got to win or lose. And that's what I think is so great about this show and this segment in particular, is taking the idea of getting in the jungle and just getting pummeled and realizing, look, there's a million different paths out of the jungle. So awesome. Awesome insight. You already have a PhD. Maybe you should become a therapist or a life coach.
yeah. That's up on my, once I'm done with this business career, I think I'm going to do that. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Don't fear the Reaper. Right. Awesome. You know, competition's good, man. Yes, it's a jungle out there, but you know what? There not only is competition good, but it also forces you to think about what you're really trying to do. And it's not a zero sum game. Everybody looks at competition as a zero sum game, but sometimes competition forces you to go into markets that don't even exist yet. And you get to create those markets because of the competition in the market maybe that you're in. So there's a lot of upsides to it for sure.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, that's all time we have for today's segment of Adapt or Perish. But if you stay tuned to Tony Curry Radio, you will hear another exciting episode of Adapt or Perish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.